Welcome to hour two of the show, however you are listening. Live with us, streaming online or on the podcast. Always appreciate it wherever you may be. Vic Nazar, Randy Janda, Jamie Dodd here with you as well. Eddie Gregory running the show. If you want to grab a phone line in this segment, your chance to do so, 604-280-0650. Always, of course, though, you can chime in onto the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, 650-650. The smart alternative, visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at DunbarLumber.com. A couple of things we want to touch on coming up. Elliot Friedman mentioning in the 32 Thoughts blog, the Canucks GM search, a little update on that. And mentioned a new name on the Jeff Merrick show earlier today. So we'll get into that through the course of the show. But I want to reset just, you know, where we were to start the show and coming off last night. You know, we've been doing this measuring stick road trip, Randeep, and you know, you gave them a C+ based on last night, and we'll do this as the road trip continues and wrapping up the road trip as well. I was more of the mind, you know, B-, difficult circumstances in that game, and there were just certain elements that they just missed, right? It was close, but no cigar evening kind of for the Vancouver Canucks last night.
Yeah, the margin of, you know, for error against the Florida Panthers team is pretty slim on a good night when you're fully healthy, when you are rested but not, you know, rusty. And they were, for the most part, yeah, they're healthy. They're going to have as many of those players in the lineup as they possibly can, but they were very rusty. And we saw that early on in that game. You were maybe seeing elements of their sloppy play, not connecting on passes, defensive zone breakdowns. But the margin for error against the Florida Panthers is slim. You have to make sure that you get to those details right on a good night. So the reason I give them a C+ is I did see that bad play. You know, there were elements of their game that were off, but they did show some decent play as well. It's just the degree of difficulty against a Florida team that has been playing, Vic, is just that much higher. So, you know, there were good elements in that game where if you finish off that chance that Brock Besser has at the beginning of the second period, or the opportunity before that that Tyler Mott has, you know, the outlook on that game may be looking a little bit different. So that really, that finishing, that lack of, you know, scoring that goal that would have changed the game and tied the game in that second period, you know, that was an element of, you know, the really mature teams, the ones that can strike and can be efficient finishing off their scoring chances. They get that done. I like the effort for the most part. There was pushback in that game, but there are certain details that you have to get right against the Florida Panthers or a team that is elite in the NHL. And the Canucks didn't have that last night. So I like their effort for the most part. There were some bad things, but they're playing a top team in the NHL. And you're not gonna win with even a few mistakes, because that's how good Florida is.
We'll get to your calls in just a second, but I want to play this back from Boudreaux last night, talking about those mistakes. But, you know, the mistakes they made were correctable, according to Bruce Boudreaux.
Just because you're a positive person by nature doesn't mean you can't learn. Like, I mean, we made a ton of mistakes today that are correctable mistakes, and hopefully that they'll understand that they're correctable mistakes that we hadn't made. So it's we'll watch it and go over it again and get back at it tomorrow, and hopefully have a different result on Wednesday.
You were talking about some of the things that they, you know, were able to do. And I think it is important to kind of highlight, it's not just 40 shots and 40 plus shots that, you know, that were empty. And there was an element of score effects here. You know, when you're trailing, you're generally going to get more shots. But the Vancouver Canucks didn't just launch the puck from the boards or from the point, which we've seen from, you know, the first 25 games. They did get to key areas and try to bury chances. And, you know, it's the structure of how they played, I thought, was okay, but it's that last little bit where it relies on skill. Like, you can have the systems and all that sort of stuff, but the finishing touches on chances is skill, and that to me is the bit that was lacking yesterday, and it was necessary. And you think about what they were doing this time off here, that part of it I think looked okay. It's the final product, and the final product for Vancouver yesterday wasn't there.
No, it wasn't. And I think if you look at that first period, especially the 5-on-5 game versus the power play, the 5-on-5 game in that first period, the Panthers dominated, right? You look at the scoring chances, they had more, even though they didn't necessarily get the shots off. But if you look at, you know, the middle of the ice, 5-on-5, the Canucks were having trouble. And I think that sloppiness that Bruce Boudreau was mentioning, you saw it early in that game. Where they caught up was, you know, having a really good power play. Even though they didn't necessarily score there, there were moments where they created scoring chances, and that kind of evened out as they headed into the second period. But you look at those key moments in that second period, which were 5-on-5. They brought their game up in that second period. Those couple of moments early on in that game, you're looking for Brock Besser to finish there. You're looking for, you know, Tyler Mott going in with speed there to finish. And that those were the key moments. And, you know, that penalty that Tyler Mott takes, I wasn't a fan of it. I know a lot of Canucks fans weren't either. But that's the game. You're going to have, you know, penalties that you don't like. But those key moments of a simple opportunity there. And if you take it, Florida will give you opportunities. If you take it, you know, that's the difference between getting a point in a game or at least heading into the third period with a chance in the game versus being out of it. And you look at those key moments of those missed chances and the penalty that was taken and the following shift after that where you have another goal scored by the Florida Panthers, that essentially decided the game. It's small moments like that where in that second they don't seem huge, but you go back to that chance by Brock Besser, you say, that could have been it. But that's the maturity aspect of it is and the clinical aspect of it in the sense that, you know, Florida has matured over the last couple of years. You know, they weren't always like this. They eventually got to that point. And you saw that moment when Huberto got a chance, he roofed it. You saw when Barkov saw that he had, you know, a step on Oliver Ekman-Larsson, he went for it. They don't take that many opportunities to finish where the Canucks are still trying to find that consistency and that maturity in their game.
Boudreau talking about you know what they worked on in their time off that you can kind of saw last night that were at least the positives in their game. Here's what Boudreau had to say on what was implemented.
Well, when we get the puck behind defensemen and we're forechecking, we're very good. We create things, we make things happen. When we move pucks, we're really good. I think the biggest problem we had was quite frankly was making bad decisions in the neutral zone and not putting pucks on tape, making bad passes, mismanaging the puck. When we weren't mismanaging the puck, we were having a lot of ozone time and doing, you know, fairly well. So, I mean, I thought our D zone coverage was sloppy a little bit. When we were good, we were real good, but I didn't think we moved our feet enough in the first period in our D zone to stop them. I mean, they're a very skilled team. They go to the net very well. They got great sticks. So you've got to eliminate them from doing that or you're going to be in trouble every night.
That's what Bruce Boudreau had to say on last night's game. And I think there were elements of that, and it'll be interesting to see how it grows over the course of this very, very difficult road trip, which continues tomorrow versus Tampa Bay. Said you have a chance to have your say in the show, 604-280-0650, if you wanted to get your thoughts in. Tanbeer from Surrey. Tanbeer, what do you want to say?
Yeah, last night's game was, you know, I was pretty, I guess, I was acceptable. I was accepted of the way the team played just because, you know, they're coming off a long break and, you know, you're not expecting much. I was hoping they would, you know, pull a rabbit out of their, you know what, but, you know, it is what it is. And it all comes down to, like, Randeep said, not finishing, but it also comes down to Elias Pettersson. I don't know where this guy is right now. I'm not going to go on here and rip him. Because he is obviously battling some issues. And I don't think it's just mental like people think it is. I think it is physical because the players that we saw a couple years ago and you know, in his rookie year was a guy that was able to, yeah, he wasn't the best skater or the fastest skater, but he would be able to create separation with his skating. And I have not seen that at all this year. He used to be a little bit physical, throw that reverse hit. He hasn't done that like maybe once all year. And almost 40 games this year now. Like, I don't know what it is. It almost feels like it's not just mental, it's physical. And the Canucks have a big decision to make here. Because let's say, I'm not expecting to see Petey all year now. Like, I don't think we're going to see the best version of Elias Pettersson for the rest of the year. Like, I've given up on that now, you know. But next year, now the Canucks have a decision to make in the offseason. Is that the player that we are going to see for the rest of his career, or was that just a bad season? Because you could look at a guy in New York right now who's also struggling, who's a similar caliber player as Elias Pettersson and Matt Barzal, a year older. Maybe they try to make a struggling player for a struggling player trade, and that's the kind of deal that I would look to make if the Canucks feel that he isn't a guy that they could, you know, rely on as a number one center, because I think Matt Barzal is, and Matt Barzal could drive play with his skating and his playmaking ability. So I don't know, like I'm at a point now where I'm not expecting to see the Elias Pettersson that we're used to seeing, and it might just be the Elias Pettersson. This might just be the real Elias Pettersson.
That's 604-280-0650 if you wanted to grab a phone line here on the People Show. Bick Nizar, Randeep Janda. You know, it's interesting, and look, it's not a unique take there. We do get a lot of text messages about, you know, PD for Barzal and all that sort of stuff. And look, I've been a long supporter of Elias Pettersson and a long defender of Elias Pettersson. I think there's the peak version of Elias Pettersson that you want to see again, I think at some point will show itself out. It's fair to wonder if it happens this season, but I do think ultimately it will show itself out. What's fascinating about what Tambier said there is an aesthetic point of it that I think people, even if you're failing, people want to be comfortable with what they're watching.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt Barzal, aesthetically, you know, very fluid skater. That even when you're in a slump, you can just naturally see, oh, right, this is why this guy has success. And I don't know if Pettersson will ever get that benefit of the doubt because, yeah, his skating can look different. It can look clunky at times. And because he doesn't have, you know, we were talking about prototype players earlier, Randy, because he just doesn't have that prototypical body, you know, there's certain elements that people are going to want to see that you just might not see with enough regularity.
Yeah, and, you know, to Tanbeer's point, though, I do agree in the sense that that separation that he mentioned, right, especially in tight, where Pettersson does have that ability to create time and space for himself. We've seen that whether it was dangles, whether it's seen it short, like, you know, short, like a burst in a short, you know, space, right? Like, he was able to create that separation, whether it was based on, you know, his stride or at the very least in the offensive zone. And we haven't necessarily seen that. And maybe we could early on in the year chalk it up to the stick that he was using and all that, but clearly it's more than that. So I do get what, you know, the caller Tanbeer was talking about in terms of it does look a little different this year. I agree with that. I also look at yesterday's game. That was mental, man. Like, Hoglander gives him a perfect pass in transition. That was one of the few things that Nils Hoglander was effective at yesterday. He had a rough game himself. But in transition, they get the puck moving up the ice. Hoglander does a great job to move up the right wing, provides a drop pass to Pettersson, and listen, you'd probably put your mortgage on him scoring that goal a couple of years ago. Going, you know, roofing that, and that's a goal guaranteed. But with Pettersson, he just flat out missed the puck. And I get it when it's a player that is, you know, it can happen to anybody, but with what we've seen with Elias Pettersson, I look at that and say, yes, maybe there's something physical, maybe there's something different there, but I still go back to the mental side of things of he is lacking confidence. And that play to me, when they, you know, panned to the bench right after that, they're showing the replay on the Sportsnet broadcast. You saw it again. He kind of threw his head back. He was kind of rolling his eyes. He was frustrated with himself. So even though he does some good stuff early on in the game, this season, Elias Pettersson, anytime that moment comes where it looks like there's a big moment in that game where he has a good chance and he's been set up or he's created a chance for himself, rather than adding confidence, it's been taking it away from him. And to me, I still think it's a little bit of both. I think the mental side of things, as we saw yesterday from that camera angle, is still telling. You look at the mannerisms, you can tell he's frustrated, which I understand. But at some point, Bick, he is the star player. He is making some good coin. You need him to power through that. And I think you have to be patient in this market. But there is a new boss on board as well, right? Jim Rutherford, when we talk about assessing the team and what they are, of course he's assessing everybody on the ice and off the ice.
Yeah, and as far as trades, it's like it's the front office needs to get built out. And hey, man, have ideas, like players across the league, and if you want to see players get dealt, it's all well and good. As far as timeline of really franchise altering trades, I think you're probably a bit too early on that.
I would say this.
Trying to be the first one in the door.
Yeah, I would say this on the Matt Barzal thing. I know he's struggling. He's played 25 games this year. He's got 21 points, so he's not struggling that much either. Maybe in terms of not getting as many games and all that. I think New York loves Barzal. I don't think he's going anywhere.
Mike in Victoria, 604-280-0650. If you want to grab a phone line. Mike, what do you want to say?
Well, first I'm going to say F no to getting rid of Petey right now. Yes, he's not playing very well, but no. But I am going to say maybe we should send him on a conditioning stint to Abbotsford and let him go and walk around everybody down there, and maybe he can gain his confidence back and then come back to the NHL and be his old self.
Thank you very much for the call. That is Mike in Victoria. So he's playing NHL games, so I don't know if you can send him to him.
Okay, let me ask you this, Bick. If somebody says, hey, all right, you're doing a good job at Sportsnet 650, but you're lacking confidence, we want you to go to a smaller and medium market.
Yes.
How are you feeling about that? Is that going to increase your confidence?
I don't know if I'm coming back.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the hockey player that's making almost $8 million per season, $7.5 million,
yeah.
Are you looking at that as a confidence booster? No, man. You're looking at it and saying, hey, agent, let's get on the phone. Let's work something out. I don't want to play here. That's not going to boost confidence.
That's a nuclear option for sure. 604-280-0650 if you wanted to grab a phone line here as we rattle through your calls here on the People's Show. Brian in Coquitlam. Brian, what's up?
Good afternoon on this rainy day. The Canucks, when they come back, are not going to have an easy schedule either. They're playing, they start off against the Panthers, and then they play the Blues, I believe, and then the Oilers, and then the Cup, and then Winnipeg. They have to go to Winnipeg, so they got four tough games there. And as far as Petey goes, if you check his stats or compared to the Sedins, the first 200 games, right? He has 170 some points. I believe Henrik had 105, and Daniel had 88, and that was their first 200 games. So you might have to give him a shot, right? I mean, he's way further ahead of those two guys. They stayed with the Canucks a long time, so.
Thanks for the call, Brian. 604-280-0650 if you wanted to grab a phone line. And Boudreaux did mention, the games after the road trip of, hey, like, these next seven aren't going to be easy. And St. Louis is kind of where he capped it. And Edmonton is going to be, McDavid and Draisaitl are, while that team is struggling, it's tough to go against those guys there.
No, it totally is. And this stretch, and we don't even know about February, right, on how that schedule looked. There's going to be a lot of games that are jam-packed in there, and we'll see how that plays out. But if you look at the comparison that, the caller made with the Sedins and Elias Pettersson, I get that. Patience is a part of this game, right? When you have a young player who is trying to figure themselves out in this league, it is going to be a part of the game. And you look at what Florida was able to do with two of their stars, and I referenced them a fair bit over the last few weeks, but Huberdeau and Sasha Barkov did not wake up and turn into superstars. It took time. If you weren't paying attention to the Florida Panthers, that's on you, but they didn't wake up and become those players. It took time. It took patience. In a Canadian market, that patience is sometimes tough to handle or tough to get a grasp of. But, what makes this even more challenging, Bick, is the fact that second contracts now are worth that much more. So, the patience that there was in the Sedin era, that isn't there to a certain degree because you're making that money a lot quicker. So I get the caller's point. But with that higher, salary comes the higher the scrutiny as well. And that's where I think a lot of young players are going to have a challenge with is that you want to push up the money. You want to make it earlier on in your career. But with that, in a Canadian market especially, comes more pressure than players than the Sedins and, other players of that same age group had to deal with in the past.
Johnny in Victoria, 650-650. I really think Pettersson is having similar issues as Nylander did after he missed training camp from contract negotiations. If I remember correctly, he didn't fully return till the following season. So that one was mid-December when Nylander joined in, right? He missed a boatload of time. Pettersson missed a handful of days of training camp, right? I understand the sentiment, but they're a little bit different. But, that transition from what you're talking about, Randy, there of being the entry-level contract player and, burgeoning into the league to now, price tag comes with responsibility. Not to sound like Spider-Man here, but, it requires you to raise your game. And now, living up to that price tag can be a a mental block. And, you know, last night, that drop pass play, and I think that's why I kind of go back to the sharpness. I don't necessarily look at that play as, you know, lack of confidence or a guy in a slump. Like, that to me is sharpness, right? And knowing how to, you know, knowing the angle to take that puck. It's stuff like that that I look at and say, because it was Pettersson and he's been slumping, people want to jump on top of it and say,
yeah.
Oh, there's that guy. He's never going to be who he is. That to me was just a guy who hasn't played in 10, 11 days.
Yeah, there are other plays in that game too, with JT Miller missing an open net at the end of the game. You know, there are other players that were not looking sharp in certain moments either, but you talk about, because he hasn't been sharp this year, that's exactly it. There's a sample size of, okay, through 35 games, you haven't been able to really play at that level, and that's the reality. So moving forward, I think there are moments where in a game that he seems like he's building that confidence, but that confidence is undercut by a moment like that. That moment in isolation, I don't worry about, but does it affect his game for the rest of the game? That's what I worry about. And if it's between the ears, we've seen him be affected by one play in a game or one play that he feels like he should have had. So, you know, that bounce back factor from Elias Pettersson, you need to see a little bit more of it in game, because it feels like a moment like that in isolation, not a big deal, but does it affect the rest of his game? That's what I'm worried about.
The other part that kind of is, as far as, you know, chemistry that was broken up last night, not only was it, hey, them not playing after 10 games, but the lines really got changed up, right? And here's, if this is who the Canucks are going to play as for the next couple of games here and at practice today, forward lines were still the same. There were some changes last night, and redeveloping that part is going to take a little bit of time as well. I want to play this before we go to break, and we'll talk about it on the other side. If you have thoughts, 650-650, you can chime in. But Elliot Friedman dropped a little nugget on 32 Thoughts, the blog, yesterday. It was point number 7, if you want to go check it out at sportsnet.ca. It's 5 in-person interviews remaining to determine the next GM of the Vancouver Canucks. Among the finalists are Pittsburgh's Patrick Alvin and Scott Mellenby, who recently resigned after almost 10 seasons in Montreal. So those are the two names that, you know, we've heard quite a bit. Patrick Alvin, we've heard plenty of before. And then today on the Jeff Merrick Show, Elliot Friedman dropped one more name in Pat Verbeek. Here's what Elliot had to say earlier today on the Jeff Merrick Show.
One of the guys I was thinking about yesterday was Pat Verbeek. And, I don't know what this means. Probably nothing. I mean, Yzerman values Verbeek's opinion. But, you know, Yzerman's not going to tell anyone anything. He's very quiet. He likes it that way. I've wondered, you know, you take a look at Vancouver and Jim Rutherford saying he wants to hire a first-time GM. I have wondered if there's any chance Verbeek's been interviewed for that. Because the one thing about Yzerman is he likes to push Verbeek. He believes, he has said before, he believes Verbeek deserves an opportunity. And he's kind of put his name out there before. Got no proof of it, but I have wondered at times if he's ever been in the mix there.
That's an interesting name. A rising star as far as executives and someone who's had some, you know, been with successful programs, obviously. That's an interesting one, and again, we'll keep tracking the names here. We'll talk about it on the other side. If you have a phone line, hang on to your phone line, but we'll continue with that discussion as well here on The People Show. Bick Nizar, Randy Janda, Jamie Dodd here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to the show. Bick Nizar, Randy Janda, Jamie Dodd here with you on The People Show. Subscribe to the podcasts, Apple, Spotify, wherever you grab your pods from. And drop a review. Drop a rating. 5 stars only, of course. Appreciate that, as always. Find us wherever you have your pods. 650, 650 if you want to chime in. 604-280-0650. Hang on to the line if you've still got it. We'll get to you in just a second. But some interesting thoughts there before we went to break from Elliot Friedman. Dropping another name, Patrick Verbeek, Randy. At this stage, it feels like Patrick Alvin, it's kind of his job to lose, but as we go through this interview process, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out and what other names emerge through this process.
With Alvin, you know, the links to Rutherford, the way that even though Alvin was a part of the organization when Rutherford arrived, there was a steady progression upwards with Rutherford in charge for Alvin. He was, you know, he worked his way from the scouting department all the way to having senior executive roles within the organization, taking over for Rutherford once Rutherford left and was the interim GM. So I think those links and the mentor element is something that is important to Jim Rutherford, as we've talked about at length here on this show. But some of those other names, and you talked about Scott Mellenby, the day that he left the Montreal Canadiens, I remember that on a Saturday night, those links immediately started coming out because of, you know, the connection to the Mike Gillis regime. This was an interesting timing with what was going on with the Canucks. The Pat Verbeek angle is interesting, though. And we did play the clip of Elliot Friedman just mentioning it there, the little ball of hate, as he's known during his playing days. But you do have a few people in that Detroit organization that are having a bigger name across the league. Verbeek has been there, you know, even in his time as Tampa Bay. Chris Draper is another
Draper,
name.
Yeah.
Yep, he's got a senior role there, and he plays pretty prominently. But, you know, I also wonder, who are some of the other names? Because five in-person interviews is what we're hearing, right? So if you got three names out there, and Alvin looks like the front runner, this is where the speculation begins on who the other names could be.
Yeah, and to be fair to Elliot, you know, the Verbeek was just his own...
In
his own mind and thinking about someone. The two that have kind of were expecting interviews, Alvin and Mellenby. But yeah, it's finally interview season for the Vancouver Canucks GM job. And, you know, part of the conversation is going to be, you know, making improvements. Because even despite having this successful run here of 10 games... no one here is admitting that this is the finished product. Work needs to be done. And I've been encouraged that I think through these 10 games, it feels like we're seeing the version of the Vancouver Canucks that I thought we'd see. Now, the results aren't going to be this promising all of the time, but you still need to make improvements. And what's funny about a game like last night, Randeep, is you kind of see the gaps that get created between the elites and where the Vancouver Canucks are. And when you watch a game like that, at some point, you kind of picture the future and you think, okay, this is where the Canucks can get. What are those gaps on the team that the Canucks have to where the Panthers are?
I think this is a key question, because if you're aspiring to be something, you have to look at who's there right now and what that standard is. And this is, you know, when I look at this road trip, and we talk about this year and what it means for this year, I'm looking bigger picture. I'm zooming out. I'm looking macro level to say, if the Canucks want to get here at some point in time to the level of a Florida Panthers, a Tampa Bay Lightning, Carolina Hurricanes, and of course the Washington Capitals have won the Stanley Cup. So you know they've aspired to that level. They've hit that level. There are certain things you have to get right in your makeup of roster composition. And we know Jim Rutherford, he mentioned it himself, there's going to be an assessment of what you have on the roster, where those gaps are, as you mentioned. And I look at the area of defense. Really, that's been my big criticism heading into this year, and especially that right-hand side. But if you look at players that Florida has, and Tampa Bay has, and Carolina has, and to a certain degree, Washington has, but when they won the Cup, they definitely had this as well, is players that can move the puck up, players that can activate, players that are comfortable making passes and creating offense from defense. The Canucks don't have that totally. Like, they have Quinn Hughes, who's one of the best, but outside of that, you have it in numbers. And what you saw from third-pairing defensemen on the Florida Panthers last night, like Brandon Montour, he's on a third pair. In other teams, he'd probably be playing on a second pairing, but he was activating. You know, he was drawing penalties. He was creating offense indirectly, if not directly, and that's a third-pair defenseman on this team. Gustav Forsling, he's a number four defenseman on this team right now, but he's another player, along with Radko Gudas, who, you know, the analytics community loves going back to his time in Philadelphia even. This is a player that does help generate offense, and Ekblad, of course, is really good at that. So when I look at this team and say area to address is how do you move that puck forward, how do you generate offense from defense, and that's a huge gap right now that I think – moving forward, Jim Rutherford's going to have to address. And the problem is you can't address it in free agency. You can't address it by giving up draft picks, because he doesn't want to do that. And you're building towards something with younger players. So how do you find those players when that is a significant, serious gap on your roster?
And Bruce Boudreau actually talked about that today. He was asked about, you know, D-men providing offense. Here's what Boudreau had to say today in his media availability, just talking about the D-men on the team.
Well, I don't want to work around it. I want to make it happen. I mean, if we can, you need more than one guy like Quinn to be able to jump into the play, to be able to create some offense from the defense. If you don't have that, look at all the good teams in the NHL. You take the top 10, their defense are all mobile, and they can rack up points, and they create offense from the defense. And of course we would like more of that. I mean, but sometimes we just don't have the personnel for that kind of play. So when you don't do that, you better shut other teams down. But I mean, when you're looking at things that you would like, another mobile puck moving defenseman is always comes to the top of my list. I've been really fortunate to have defensemen that can do that, whether it was Minnesota, where we're always in the top two or three offensive defensemen. I had Mike Green, who scored 30 goals. I had, you know, the Cam Fowler and Hampus Lindholm were very good mobile defensemen. So, I mean, I've been really lucky. But I think the best of them all is Quinn. But, I mean, obviously we could use some more of that.
That's Bruce Boudreau when he met with media earlier today. And you know who I think of when I hear that, Randy?
Who's that?
Jack Rathbone, right? Like, that's a guy that just needs to get healthy. And for what you were talking about, guys at the bottom end of your roster to fulfill that role and constantly move the puck. And it's not as if I thought, you know, it was one of the things I was trying to keep an eye on last night of how Florida would pressure Vancouver and how much, you know, with what difficulty would they get out of their own zone. And I thought they had a passing grade. There were moments when Florida made it difficult, of course. But by and large, I think you can be encouraged by that on a whole. But, you know, someone like Jack Rathbone would just make such a nice difference here on the bottom end of the roster. And as far as what's on the roster, I think that type of, you know, statement there from Boudreau, not that I think he's deliberately calling anyone out, but when you apply that kind of line of logic to what's on the roster right now, I know he's been very stable in his own end and very impressive, but producing offense, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, right? Like, it's, To what level are you willing to be a bit more daring to try to create offense? He's been very good from the offensive blue line backwards, but in the offensive zone, how many times have we seen him kind of lead a rush? How many times have we seen him carry the puck through the neutral zone, entering the zone, threatening defenders, creating, you know, those numbers advantages, 4-on-3, whatever it is? It's few and far between.
We know that he's got it on his resume. He's done that in the past, but here it hasn't translated into that. And when we're looking at raw point totals, I think, you know, projecting a 40-point defenseman, especially in the role that he's playing, you need to play power play, right? We've seen that in the past as well, where if you want to get near that number, power play time is pretty necessary. You're not going to get that with Quinn Hughes being the power play quarterback that he is. So an uptick, absolutely. But, you know, what is that realistic number? I think if you look at the Canucks' output from a defensive position, they haven't been able to get much offense from their defense. And Oliver Ekman-Larsson's a part of that. You know, his two goals this season and four assists is not going to cut it. And his two goals are actually up there in terms of defensive scoring. They've only scored 7 goals from the back end this year, Bick. You know, think about that for a second. Cale Makar has more than double the goals that the Vancouver Canucks back end does. And you're going to need more of that.
That's an amazing fact.
It is, right? He's got more than double. And Oliver Ekman-Larsson is going to have to show more offense. But I think part of this statement today from Bruce Boudreau, and I agree with you, I don't think he's trying to light anybody up with this. It's just acknowledgement of, do we have the horses to run? Do you have the mobile defenseman? Jack Rathbone's a part of it. But when I think about teams making moves, because the Canucks at some point, whether it's this year or the offseason, they will have to make some moves. Where are you making those moves? Where are you finding those diamonds in the rough? Because you cannot go big game hunting in free agency. You don't have the cap space for that. You can't do that in the trade market because you don't want to give up assets. And once again, you probably don't have the cap room for that. So where are you finding your Michael Kempneys of the world, like Washington did that year? You know, I heard Drance and Jamie talking about a Justin Schultz type of player. Where are you finding that player that is being valued less by some other organization that could provide maybe a second or third pairing role for you in that sense? And Jack Rathbone could be a part of the equation, but he's got some work to do on his end in the AHL. Who are the other guys? Because on that right-hand side especially, I think they need one to two guys that are going to be on the cheaper end, where you're going to have to take a bit of a flyer on somebody, maybe give up a mid-round pick, maybe a third or a fourth, and see if you can pick up a player that is off the radar somewhere else.
Bick Nizar, Randeep Janda, Jamie Dodd as well here on the People's Show. So, Quinn Hughes has been having, you know, the impressive season on the back end. And yesterday, the coaches were announced for the All-Star team. And I think there's an expectation, hey, the Canucks will have a couple of representatives going to the All-Star game. We wanted to do this today. The Pacific Division All-Star team, what does it look like? Now, if you need a refresher, it's been a while since you've seen an All-Star game. Six forwards, three D-men, and two goalies represent the Pacific Division. What, like, if you were crafting out a team, what would it look like right now, guys? Either we do this consensus or we have our own teams here. I think we try to come to some sort of consensus here. Who are the Pacific Division All-Stars?
Okay.
Who are the automatics? Like, the automatics are McDavid and Draisaitl, right?
For sure. Yeah, when you're leading the league in points, you're going to be definitely up there. Let's start with the forwards as well, because I think that could be we could carve it up in different position groups. But Draisaitl, McDavid, I think they both have to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that is where it gets interesting. I look at this and say, it's got to be a points race to me. Like, with all due respect to the best two-way forwards in the game, when I think
this
the All-Star
is a showcase
games, this is a showcase event. We're not going to, like, the Guy Carbonneaus are not going to be invited to this in their prime, right? Like, no. Selke winners, if you produce offense, sure. So,
And the one other thing that sucks here, or I shouldn't say sucks, but the other thing that's important to factor in is representation.
Yes.
Right? Like, you have to get someone from every team here.
Okay, so on that note, San Jose, they've had some good efforts from a few players this year, but if you look at how he's played this year in his point totals, I think Timo Meier has to be one of those forwards.
I think it's between Hertl and Meier, and I would send Meier. Like, he's
off the radar this year. He's been very – he's up there with Kaprizov in terms of point totals, guys.
He's got 39 and 32. Like, it's really, really strong season that's just kind of going unnoticed, and he's been phenomenal this year. He would be my Shark representative for sure.
Okay.
Troy Carey would be my Anaheim representative.
All right, Calgary, I think it's got to be Johnny Gaudreau. Like, on the back end, it's either that or Jacob Markstrom. I don't think Markstrom is in the conversation in the goalie debate, because we'll get into that in a second. Like, he's in the conversation, but would I pick him? There's some debate there. I think Gaudreau.
Yeah.
Gaudreau has silenced the haters to a certain extent. He is playing a good two-way game, but his point totals are up there. He's top 10 in the league.
All right, so then we're at five forwards here.
The question is,
yeah,
you've got another spot, and JT Miller is still potentially on the board.
That's what's going to pose it to you, because it's tough to find the extra guy here, because you have to take someone from the Seattle Kraken, and
really,
it's not going to be their goaltending.
No,
it's not going to be someone on their blue line. Like, you're not really sending Adam Larson to be like, hey man, your defensive WAR this year has been so awesome. We can't wait to send you to the All-Star game. No one cares about that. Giordano's not having a statistical season where you have to, pigeonhole him in there.
But who is having a statistical season in the Seattle Kraken? Like, that's the problem, right? So where we're essentially looking at it, you're saying, if you're going to have to send somebody, I would rather just give the elder statesman, defenseman, like Giordano, go. Because Jordan Eberle, I'm not feeling that. Like, I'd rather send Giordano. At least there's a legacy aspect there.
Jared McCann's got 14 goals.
It's true. True.
Like, this is why I want to have this conversation.
Man.
It totally is. Okay, so let's put a pin in Gaudreau, McCann, and Eberle, because I think your representation might have a say in all of this, right? And then Miller's part of that conversation.
For sure.
I'm not sure if we're missing any other forwards here in the Pacific, because Stone missed some time. Patrick Reddy missed some time here. Eichel obviously can't go. I don't know. Do you want to send Chandler Stephenson?
Like, he's a bubble guy, right? But you've got other options in Vegas. So, like, the problem here with the JT Miller thing is, if you put him in, who are you leaving off from the Canucks? So that's why I think we got to keep this one as the wild card right now. We got five spots.
Okay.
And then if you're considering Quinn Hughes or Thatcher Demko, the Canucks are going to have three participants on this team. That's a pretty significant portion.
Don't think so.
No, so I think JT Miller might actually fall off here.
it's going to be tough for him. It's mind blowing to me, but I think it's going to be tough for him. All right, on the blue line, do you have any automatics?
I think Quinn Hughes to me is an automatic in that division.
Okay, so he's not for me because of the conversation we're talking about.
Okay,
I think if we're ranking Canucks All Stars, I think Quinn goes third.
Really? Okay.
I think behind JT, and I think Demko's the automatic. Like Demko's the one that has to go. He's been that mind blowingly good. You know, Markstrom and Gibson to me would be the other candidates, and I think he's been better than those guys. So Demko's the one that has to go. We'll have that conversation when we get to goaltending. But Quinn, I'm willing to just kind of wait. My automatic on the blue line, and it's tough because he did miss some time though. But Drew Doughty's got to go to this All Star game.
I'm a Drew Doughty guy. Like I appreciate what he offers to the league.
He's a point a game right now, man.
He is, but Brent Burns has had a hell of a year. Like he's had a bounce back. Nobody's really talking about him, but he's playing really well. He's got actually outproduced Erik Karlsson, who we've been giving that return season kind of narrative to, that comeback season. And my three in the Pacific would be Quinn Hughes, Brent Burns, and in Vegas, it's got to be Theodore or Petrangelo. Like, they're so close when it comes to how well they've played. And if you're giving one of the Vegas guys an opportunity...
Well, we haven't sent any Vegas guys yet.
Yeah, I'd probably lean with the BC boy, Shea Theodore.
All right, so I don't really care between Petrangelo and Theodore.
There's somebody from Vegas.
I'd probably send Petrangelo, but whatever. I'm not going to fight you on that one. So it's okay. We'll send Shea Theodore. See, again, it becomes a conversation between Hughes, Doughty, and Burns. We can only send two of them. It's like it's razor thin here. We're not sending any Oilers. We're not sending Darnell Nurse. We're not sending Hampus Lindholm. We're not sending Chris Tanev or anything like that. It gets tough. Like, this is the thing.
As much as I like Drew Doughty, I think the injury does matter here. But here's the problem, though. You don't have an LA King on the roster yet, so you're going to need one at some point. So
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's tricky. That's tricky. So, all right, do you bump Burns or Hughes at this point? Because it's going to come down to, do you have two San Jose Sharks or do you have two Canucks, most likely? I'd rather have two Canucks. Is that being a homer?
Yeah, probably. Probably a little bit, but I do think that's fine. It's acceptable to be a homer in the right moments. If you had to send, so basically we're choosing between, if you send Burns, you then send Miller. Oh no, we still haven't sent a Seattle Kraken.
No, we haven't. So it's going to have to be Eberle or McCann. Like, this is confusing, man. I usually criticize when these selections come out and say, how could you not have this guy? It's not that easy when you need that representation from every single team.
Oh, this is brutal. All right, so let's send
Doughty. We'll bump.
Okay, so we'll send Doughty and Hughes,
and we'll bump Burns.
And Burns gets bumped, and then we'll send Eberle or McCann. Actually, you know, for the Canucks content, let's send
Jared McCann.
Send Jared McCann.
Let's go with the drama.
So then your goalies are Demko, and then who's your second goalie?
It's not LA.
It's got to be Gibson or Markstrom.
Yeah. Well, if it's going by stats, like Gibson's been all right. Like he has, you know, he's had his moments where I look at him and I'm all-star. I don't know. I don't know about that one.
I don't know if it screams all-star. And Robin Lehner's not having an all-star season either.
No, his save percentage and all that stuff is
905. I think I saw.
Yeah, it's 905. It's kind of league average-ish, right? In that range. Markstrom is having a much better year. He's played, you know, his 926 save percentage, his wins and his games played are lower than some of the other guys, but they've played less games. So if I'm leaning towards anybody, I'd probably go Jacob Markstrom, Thatcher Demko.
All right. So our Pacific Division All-Star team is Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Troy Terry, Timo Meier, Jared McCann. We need one more name here.
Johnny Gaudreau.
All right, so Gaudreau. And then our defense is Theodore, Doughty, Hughes, Demko, Markstrom.
It's not bad. I think that's pretty good.
It's not bad. It seems weird that JT Miller's not there, though, right?
Well, you got to disrespect one of the guys to get equal representation. You think JT really cares at this point in his career? He just wants to win a cup, man.
Man, he's got 36 points in 35 games. I mean, Quinn Hughes has got 28 in 34. It's equally as impressive.
JT will care if he's an all-star next year when it's a contract year. That's what he cares about, I think.
Man, I got to get on that high profile when I'm in my UFA year. That's the year I want to dominate.
You want to lead with the all-star thing that year, not this year.
650-650 if you want to chime in with who you think should represent the All-Star, the Pacific Division All-Star team. People are ripping into me for the Drew Doughty one. Drew Doughty's been incredible this year.
He's
truly incredible.
I'm a big Drew Doughty fan. I know that's not a popular opinion in the city, but those games played.
I know.
Yeah, when you're basing it compared to some of those other guys like Burns and even Erik Karlsson, right? Pretty solid year this year.
Mm-hmm. You know, the way to cheat this would be send Jonathan Quick. He's played 22 games. He's got a .921 save percentage. And then you can get in Brent Burns instead.
Yep. They might have to do that. It's either that or they send Anze Kopitar and they bump like a Johnny Gaudreau or something from the roster.
Yeah. All right. Well, keep sending in your thoughts for the Pacific Division All-Star game. Lots of good ones. We'll read them on the other side. We'll also talk to not necessarily an All-Star, even better than an All-Star, an Olympian. Natalie Spooner will join us after being named to the Canadian Women's Olympic Hockey Team. We'll talk to her on the other side about the announcement, getting ready for the Olympics and all sorts of stuff. On the way. Natalie Spooner joins us next here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.